Thank you so much. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the review of All Right Protection Mechanisms, RPMs, and all GTLD PDP working group calls held 20th of September, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
This is Claudia.
This is Rebecca Tushnet. I'm trying to get in the room, but I don't know if I've succeeded.
And Claudio, I have you noted as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hearing no more names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I'll turn it over to our co-chair, Kathy Kleinman.
This is Kathy Kleinman, but I believe Phil Corwin is chairing today.
Yes, that is correct.
And I'll turn it over to Phil.
Thank you. And thanks, Kathy, and welcome work group members to this call today. For all members of the Jewish faith, Happy New Year. I know the New Year starts at sundown tonight. I'll also mention before we get into the substance of our work that this afternoon, well, my afternoon, starting at 5 p.m. Eastern time, the GNSL Council will be holding its Monday meeting, I and your other co-chairs, of course, I'll be on the call because I'm on council, but your other co-chairs will be on as well because one of the first orders of business for council today is to consider approval of the motion we filed 10 days ago, our data collection request, including a request from monetary support for professional survey taking to complete some of the data collection tasks that were identified by the Sunrise Registration and Trademark Claims working team. So that is coming up today. We're hopeful for a positive council vote on that, and we'll keep you all apprised. And I'm good. I'm glad to see now that Mr. McGrady is on, because while I'm chairing today's call, he's going to lead role along with other members of the sub-team that looked at questions on private protections. They completed their work next Friday, and we're going to be reviewing the revised and modified list of questions that they're bringing back to the full working group today to get working group reaction. So with that, I would ask, and I see Paul is in the chat room and on the phone, and that's good. Can staff put up the document produced by that sub-team, which will be the main focus of today's call? And while we're doing that, I note that Mary in the chat room has noted that the council meeting is audiocast live, that anyone who wishes to can listen to that. You don't have to be a counselor to endure 2 hours of policy minutia. So Mary's provided the link, and if in 4 hours, just under 4 hours, you want to listen in on that call and in particular see the presentation and disposition of that data collection motion, you're welcome to join in the spirit of ICANN transparency. So with that, we now have the document from the sub-team there. We've got some background noise. If you're not speaking, please mute your phones, especially if your speakers are on. And I guess I would ask, I participated, I believe, in just about all the calls of this sub-team, but I would pass the baton to Paul McGrady, who graciously offered to chair it, and let him present this document for your consideration and discussion. So, Paul, can I ask you to chime in now?
Thanks, Phil. Happy to do so.
Thank you, Paul.
So, can you hear me?
Hear you very well.
Okay, great. Thanks. Happy to jump in here. And as a preliminary matter, there is a preliminary note. I think perhaps staff drafted that note. I apologize if I've seen it before, but it's not ringing a bell. I don't know that there's anything.
Paul, this is Phil. You're breaking up somewhat. I don't know if you're on a speaker or I don't know what you're using as a mic, but we're having you're there and then you're gone for a moment, then back.
Okay, I can see if I can get into a better spot.
Okay.
Is that it?
That seems to be better, Paul. And Mary in the chat has offered to discuss the preamble if you'd like to let her do that.
Yeah, that would be lovely. So I will turn it over to Mary. Mary, please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Phil and Paul and everyone. This is Mary from staff. Brief note on what is labeled as the preliminary note. If you look back at the original set of questions, there was actually a preliminary note that was from the co-chairs, and we have retained much of that information in this version because it does provide the backdrop to what the subteam is doing. The only addition to the original note is the and that is something to note that the subteam had deleted a number of questions, but those have been archived at subteam request on the working group wiki, and so we provided the link there in the third paragraph. Other than that, it's merely an introductory note that retains quite a lot of the background from the original co-chair's note. Thanks, Phil and Paul.
Thanks, Mary. That's very helpful. We will let the preamble speak for itself, since it was not the subject necessarily of back and forth by the team. But I think Mary's done a great job explaining that part of the document. Phil, I see your hands up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Paul, and this has been my last interruption. I just wanted to comment in regard to that last paragraph to point out that all of these questions were not original charter questions. The co-chairs thought it was important for our overall task to understand what private sector additional RPMs are out there and available to trademark holders, and we had proposed some questions on that. The sub-team, in its discretion as wisdom, has reformulated some of the questions and rejected others, and that's, so far as this co-chair is concerned, that's the way it should work. We are here as co-chairs to promote the efficient administration of this working group, not to dictate any particular approach or outcome, and we're gratified, at least I'm gratified, that the sub-team thought that many of these questions in somewhat modified form were worth pursuing. So I'll stop there and turn it back to you.
Thanks, Phil. So I think we'll just walk through these questions I think if people have questions about specific questions, we can open a queue on those. I don't think that the purpose of today's call is to necessarily open up renegotiation on the questions. I think that was the point of the sub-team, and if anything needs to be reopened up later or whatever, I'll leave that to the co-chairs. But I'm happy to try to answer any questions that people have about these and may call upon my sub-team mates to help me out if I get in a jam. So the first question, how and to what extent does use of protected marks list, e.g. blocking services, affect the utilization of other RPMs, especially Sunrise registrations? Nope, the sub-team considered that this the overarching issue of the topic of our additional marketplaces, RPM, As a result, that moved up, was further down the document originally, and has made its way to the very first spot. Questions on this question? George, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
George Gregos for the transcript. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's the right time now. Are we going to have a separate call to discuss the data sources for these questions, to answer these questions, or should I bring that up right now?
Thanks, George. I don't know the answer to that. I'm wondering perhaps if Phil or Mary could jump in here. Mary, your hand's up. Please go ahead.
Phil, I'll let the staff speak first and see if I need to add anything.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Paul and Phil, and thanks, George, for the question. This is Mary from staff. The sub-team did not specifically list a list of data sources or specific tasks to be gathered. So from the staff perspective, what could happen is following the working group's review of these questions and perhaps even concurrent with your discussion starting today, extent that the group agrees that certain questions require some data, we can identify what that data is and perhaps also the sources. We would then probably add that to the list of data gathering tasks that we have compiled. At this point, as yet what that is or what it means, and we certainly don't know if this will require, you know, additional budget and resources on top of the request that was just submitted to the council. Noting, of course, that that request was specific to Sunrise and trademark claims. I hope that helps.
George Kirikos here. Can I respond to that?
Sure, George. Please go ahead.
Yeah, because if we're going to answer that question, we're going to need, for as a deliverable, a list of all the protected marks list programs, for example, the donuts protected marks list for all the registries in order to be able to figure out which registries had those measures in effect and which ones didn't. And also that matrix or spreadsheet or whatever that's the deliverable will also have to carefully take into account when that program was in effect. For example, Donuts has their DPML, but they later implemented it for TLDs that they acquired. For example, the .irish string. I'll send a link in the chat room. And so to the extent that .irish is now covered by DPML, we would have to carefully take into account whether it had that program in effect at the time of the Sunrise program, at the time of the Sunrise period for that particular TLD. And also if we're going to be getting statistics on actual DPML registrations, I'm not sure if the registry operator is going to share those statistics. But if we do, we would have to get them in a time series format because, for example, let's say a TLD launched in 2014, there would have been a different number of strings that were covered by a protected marks list compared to, say, 2017, depending on the marketing of that program and the increased number of TLDs that were covered, et cetera. So we need to be very careful in terms of the data collection to be able to answer this question. But I do agree that question number one is a very valid question. So my only concern is about the data collection. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Any other questions or comments on question number one? Last call for hands up in the chat, or okay? All right, seeing none, let's move on to question number two. Question number two has some subparts. So question number two, what information on the following aspects of the operation of the Trademark Clearinghouse is available and where can it be found? 2A, ancillary services offered by the Trademark Clearinghouse which are not mandated by the ICANN RPMs, including but not limited to the post 90 days ongoing notification service and other services in support of the registry-specific offerings? And B, with whom and under what arrangements does the Trademark Clearinghouse share data and for what non-mandated RPM purposes? Perhaps I should read the little explanation underneath. In considering this question, too, the working group should take into account and avoid duplicating other work undertaken by the working group. In reviewing the trademark clearinghouse, the working group should also distinguish between services related to the trademark clearinghouse database and those provided by the trademark clearinghouse validator. Okay. So I will open a queue on questions or comments about question number two. Michael Graham, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
Michael Graham, for the record. I was just wondering about the use of the term non-mandated, whether we should have that limitation. I suppose that keys into the keynote or the footnote, but, I'd rather, if we're asking that, why not have the complete list so that, then we can determine what's non-mandated. Otherwise, we leave that open for discussion.
Thanks, Michael. I will see if anybody would like to reply to that or make their own comment. All right, I think that the reason why it's written the way it is because our remit as a sub-team was pretty narrow, looking only at these additional marketplace protections and therefore the carve-out away from mandated versus additional marketplace. And so I think that's why we ended up. If the working group wants to fiddle with this, that's up to the working group and the co-chairs who are leading it. But that's just by way of explanation. That's why we ended up having what we ended up we had. Susan Payne says that Paul. Yes, I agree. I saw Susan's hand go up briefly and then down, so I must have gotten the answer right. That's good. All right. Any other questions or comments about question number two? Okay. Seeing none, I will move on then to question number three. Are registry operators relying on the results of the Trademark Clearinghouse validation services or accessing the Trademark Clearinghouse database to provide additional marketplace RPMs? And if so, in what ways? Is there language in the current adopted TMCH policy or related documents that expressly permits, prohibits, or otherwise addresses such use by registry operators? Are registry operators able to provide the same or similar additional marketplace RPMs without relying on the TMCH validation or access to the TMCH database? Will there be an increase in cost? If so, what will this be to stakeholders along the value chain, i.e., brand owners, registries, registrars, other registrants? And there is a sub-team explanatory note. Again, some of these explanatory notes were not the subject of back and forth, and so I'm operating under the assumption that these were staff comments, but if they weren't staff comments, if staff could correct me. I'll read the explanatory note. The sub-team's discussion of this question resulted in agreement amongst most sub-team members that the answer to this question as to whether and how some registry operators are relying on TMCH and or accessing the TMCH database in order to provide additional marketplace RPMs is yes. This is based on information provided by some registry operator members of the sub-team, as well as registry responses to a poll conducted by the working group in December 2016. The poll questions included the following: are you accessing data and records in the TMCH for purposes other than obtaining information necessary for the provision of Sunrise and Claim Services in accordance with ICANN's user manuals and technical requirements? And two, are you using any capabilities of the TMCH other than for Sunrise and trademark claims notices? Two registries, PIR and AFNIC, responded no to both questions. Paul Donuts responded yes to both. For one, it was to verify domains protected marks list, DPML block request. And for two, it was to leverage SMD files as qualifiers for the DPML service. Similarly, the sub-team came to a similar conclusion in relation to the question about cost increases where a registry operator provides additional marketplace RPMs without relying on the TMCH validation services or accessing the TMCH database. The sub-team believes that even if the answer to these initial questions are yes, the information and any additional input that may be provided as part of the responses will be useful to the working group. So that's a mouthful. I agree with this comment, as an explanation of what we're up to, it was sort of, you know, we bottom line is we know the answer to some of these questions are yes, but we're still trying to get to some of the information that flows from the simple, you know, binary yes or no. So that's a whole lot of question number three and a whole lot of explanation of question number three. So I can open up the floor here for questions or comments on question number three. Okay, I don't see any hands. I will say that this is where I jinx myself. Oh, here's a hand. Okay, Jay Scott, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
Sure, this is Jay Scott Evans for the record, and I put it into the chat box, but it didn't get picked up. I'm not sure what relevance this information has to determining the efficacy of the current RPMs. I don't understand how it provides us with information to look at the efficacy of the RPMs. I can see with question one, of course, when you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, when an additional marketplace solution was offered that is different from what is mandated, how did that affect the use of the other RPMs? I think that is a valid question. In other words, are there solutions out there that could offer something different that would make the other ones not as necessary or not as attractive to the users of those services? I don't understand why we're asking who gets what information from where. I don't understand how that affects the efficacy, the UDRP or the URS or the Sunrise registrations. I don't see how it affects that. Maybe it's because I'm not a technical person. I'm missing a point. But I just don't understand that I understand that.
Okay. Thank you, Jay Scott. Susan, I see your hands up. Can you please come in?
Thanks. Yes, to respond to you, Jay Scott, I think this was one that we did talk about quite a lot in the subgroup, and I think we were somewhat split on the necessity of including this question or not, hence the lengthy explanation, because we were trying to capture some of the things that we talked about and to ensure that we captured the views of a number in the group that kind of we already know the answers to these things. But, you know, insofar as it's useful, it goes to utilization of the TMCH or not. My personal view is it not a great deal turns on it. I mean, it's use of the TMCH, but it's clear to me that if someone wanted to offer an additional marketplace RPM and the TMCH didn't exist, you could still do it, obviously. You'd just have to validate in some other way. But for what it's worth, it does identify that there are uses of the TMCH that are not the mandated Sunrise claims provisions. I don't know if that's helpful.
Thanks, Susan. Phil, I see your hands up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just to add to what Susan said, as she noted, this was discussed at length by the sub-team. The sub-team ultimately decided to leave this question in this form, not to discard it as they did with some of the other questions. And the primary purpose is to understand the relationship between the private protections and data provided by the TMCH. It's mostly a greater understanding question. It's probably not the most critical one here, but I would urge that, as Paul said, that we would not debate further changing or eliminating these questions on this call, but talk about the next steps for pursuing them. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. I saw in the chat that there was a question from John Nevitt about whether or not we should assume that the explanatory notes will not be included when the questionnaire goes out. That's my understanding, John, and I think Phil agreed with that in the chat. You know, these explanatory notes were not, they weren't haggled over. like all the questions were on the call. So I think that they are for the benefit of this working group. So I wouldn't expect to see those in the survey that goes out. Phil, your hand was okay. Your hand's down. Okay. Let's keep. Before we move on to question number four, any last questions or concerns about question number three? Okay. Question number four. What are each registry operator's rules for each type of additional marketplace RPM it offers, noting that some new GTLD registry operators offer more than one version of a protected marks list service? And then there's some subpoints here. Where a trademark holder uses a protected marks list service, e.g. a blocking service, for one class of goods or services, are they able to block another rights holder who holds the same different class for different classes of goods or services? Second bullet, what do registry operators impose as a condition for using protected marks list, e.g. blocking services, for example? Do they all use the valid SMD file contained in the TMCH database? And then the final bullet, how much and what manner of use does each registry operator make of data from the TMCH or the trademark holder in providing its additional marketplace RPMs? So, you know, question four had quite a few parts. I will say that reading through these questions again after having been away from them for a week is sort of like visiting an old friend or going to a high school reunion. They're very familiar, but at the same time, when you see them in the fresh light, they certainly you know they're interesting, and they make you think through them, all this stuff again. All right, so I will open a queue on question four. Any questions or concerns, comments about question number four? Last call. Questions or concerns about question number four? Okay. All right. Well, then, moving on to question number five. For registry operators that extended the trademark claim service beyond the required 90 days, and for registrars who operated the extended service, what has been their experience in terms of exact matches generated beyond the mandatory period? For example, in terms of registration volume and numbers of exact matches. Any questions or comments, concerns about question number five? Okay. Oh, here's a hand. Hi, George. I see your hand. Please go ahead.
George Karikos again. I noticed the term exact matches. I noticed that Donuts had DPML Plus, which provided expanded matches. So I was curious whether that's going to be captured somewhere in our questions. Thank you.
Thanks, George. It was not something that the sub-team discussed, I don't believe. If I'm wrong, I'd encourage us to raise our hand and correct me. And so this particular question only deals with the question of exact matches. I see that George has put a link to the DPML Plus description in the chat. Thank you, George. Mary says, "At Paul, that is correct. The sub-team focused on exact matches only." All right, Phil, I see your hands up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Paul. Just to briefly comment, the reason the question is framed that way is because for extended claim services at some registries, the only matches they would be aware of would be exact matches. There's no – they wouldn't be aware if there were any inexact matches, non-exact matches based on any number of different – categories, you know, missing digits, additional, you know, letters, whatever. So that's the only data they would have. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil, for that clarification. And I see another clarification in the comment, which is from John Nevitt, Question number five is for claims. No. In other words, the exact match question here relates to the trademark's claim service extended beyond the 90 days. Question number five does not address protected marks lists. Jay Scott says, question five deals with claim services. Question four deals with DPML and speaks to the fact that they were variants of the DPMLs. All right. Any other questions or comment on question number five? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on then to question number six. What role does the TMCH provider front end play in servicing the additional marketplace RPMs? For example, what services do you provide to ICANN registry operators? Does the TMCH use any data from the clearinghouse to provide these services? If so, please explain. And how are you compensated for the provision of these services? Any questions, concerns, comments? Number six. We're getting some background noise from someone whose phone is not on mute. Any questions, concerns? Opening a queue, hands up. Going once, going twice. Want to make sure everybody has a chance to speak to it. Okay. Well, that takes us through the question set, which I think we set a land speed record. So I will ask Phil, what's next?
Thank you, Paul, noting that your sub-team did such an excellent job that there were barely any questions or comments about these final form of these questions. I think the next step, and I welcome any staff input on this, is we've got this list of questions now. Is the working group comfortable with deciding whether they're in a good enough form to send to the registry operators who offer private services, the registrars, and to Deloitte as applicable for each question, and start searching for answers, and whether we need to do anything additional in terms of data gathering in response to these questions. So let me see if staff has any comment on that, and then open that for discussion. This is a very quiet group today. I see Mary typing, no comment from staff. We agree with Phil. Michael Graham, go ahead.
Yeah, Phil, Michael Graham for the record. I was just wondering if there are any representatives of any of the registries on this call that might respond to that question, whether or not this is in a form that they believe they would be able to answer to. That would be helpful.
Okay, not to single anyone out, but I do see John Nevitt on the call. If he wants to comment, he was a very active member of the sub-team, and, of course, Donuts is one of the principal new TLD registry operators offering additional protections.
Phil, it's Michael Graham again. I see that John, I think, has answered in the chat. I'm fine with it as is. So maybe that's his answer.
Okay. Thank you. So at least the gentleman from Donuts is fine with the current form of these questions and with moving on to sending them out depending on the question, to the proper parties for responses. My co-chair, Kathy Kleiman. Kathy?
Hi, thanks, Phil. This is Kathy Kleiman speaking in my personal capacity and wondering if question four, first bullet point, a question about trademark owners who might, whether there are additional rights holders who might be blocked by something in a protected marks list. Here's the question, whether we might want to include an outreach. Also, we have a questionnaire that will be going out on trademark claims and Sunrise to trademark owners generally. Do we want to ask this question as well to them? Have people been blocked when they have trademarks, but yet is there some issue? This might be one to go out to the general public or at least to the trademark public as well. Thanks.
Okay, I think that's a useful suggestion, Kathy. Do others have a response to that? I see Greg's hand up. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks. Greg Chatton for the record. Kathy's question caused me to reread this first bullet point. And I guess I'm just asking more for a point of information. Is it possible to use a protected mark list for a particular class of goods or services, or are they only for general blocks? This question seems to presume that there is a mechanism for a trademark holder to use a protected mark list service on a class of goods basis. Either that or the question is very inartfully phrased, and it's going back to whether the mark holder has a registration that's only in one class as opposed to three or seven or some other number of classes. But it doesn't seem like the mark service itself offers, as to the best of my knowledge, such a grant or service. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. This is Phil. Let me start to attempt to respond to that question, but I welcome input from folks who are on the sub-team. I think maybe the way this is worded is not quite as clear as it should be, I think the presumption is that a trademark, a registered trademark blocks a certain group of goods and services, and when that particular mark holder registers that list, it might be blocking someone who uses the same word mark for totally different goods and services. But I think the first part of the question, what are the rules, would tell us whether any registry operator offers such specific vertical protections or whether the protected mark services simply block a term across all of a registry operator's TLDs, regardless of goods and services. So I think the answer would come, but perhaps the question, despite all the work on it, might have been worded just a little bit in a more clear fashion. And Paul, I see your hand up. You probably want to jump in on this. Thanks.
Thanks, Phil. So a question like this that's worded by committee rather than worded by only one stakeholder certainly may not be as clear as if one person were holding the pen. The idea here, of course, is we're seeking information from the additional marketplace protections providers as to whether a block based upon a particular trademark registration, which inherently has, most of them have not all the international classes in them, would forever another legitimate trademark holder who may have the same trademark, the same element rather, covering, different goods or services. So two competing trademarks like Delta Faucet or Delta Airlines. I think as inartfully worded as this question is, I think the providers of blocking lists are likely to get it and know what's being asked here. So I'm a little hesitant to reopen the question, but specifically, that's sort of the idea of what we were going for. Because, marks like Delta and Delta do exist out there in the marketplace together. You know, Apple phones and Apple vacations, two well-known Apples. And so that's what we're trying to get at here. As far as Kathy's suggestion that this also be sent to the trademark community, I don't have any particular objection to that, but I think that we'll get the most useful responses from the additional marketplace providers themselves, because they're the ones who write their own rules. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I guess the ball is back in my court. So there seems to be general agreement that these questions, even were not perfectly worded, are in good enough shape to go out to the parties they should go to. I don't know that the sub-team really discussed who the target was for these questions, although in some it seems self-evident, and the majority of them would seem to go to the registry operators offering private services, in some instances to Deloitte for the extended services offered by the clearinghouse, and perhaps in some cases to users of these protections, particularly trademark owners, and we can work with the trade groups for them and the IPC on getting that out, and with other groups within ICANN. So I guess I'm wondering, and I raise the question here, that I would think the next step would be for the co-chairs working with staff to, now that the questions have been vetted with the full working group and seem to have met approval, to discuss with staff who the targets are for these questions, for each one of them, and report back to the working group with that determination on the part of staff with co-chairs, and see if everyone's okay with that, and then to get them out as soon as possible. And I guess so far we would also discuss whether there's any data relating to these that we might need other sources for, though I'm not sure any is jumping out at me right now. So that's my statement on next steps. Any questions or comments on that, about what the next step is for using these questions and getting back some answers, which we hope will provide with some useful data and information?
Bill, hi, it's Susan. I'm not in the Adobe. Could I get in the queue, please?
Susan, not only can you get in the queue, but you're number one in line because no one has their hand up. So go ahead.
Lovely. Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I think some of these questions, yes, may need to go out to people to answer, but I do think that there, some of this information is available. I'm thinking in particular of the, what are the rules for the various additional marketplace RPMs. I mean, it seems to me that registry operators who are offering one of those services do publish their rules. And so I'm not sure, from my perspective, I don't think we need to go and ask donuts what their rules are. I think we can find their rules and we can read them. And I honestly think that's probably a job that we should do. I'm not sure whose job it is, but I think it's one we could do. And it would only be if we had questions after having read those rules, because something is not clear to us, that we would need to be going to donuts and asking them a question. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, Susan, from my personal perspective, that does make sense, and I think certainly I was thinking, and I had seen a question in the chat, will the registry operators respond? And I was thinking, well, these are, in many cases, these are services they offer in the marketplace, trying to attract customers for these additional services. They describe them on their websites and pretty good detail. One could probably read those descriptions of the services and cost and have one or two additional follow-up questions. But, yeah, I think a lot of this can just be collected by staff, organized, analyzed, and reported back to the co-chairs in the full working group. Having said that, I think we still would want to give the registry operators and also Deloitte the opportunity to see the questions we're asking and provide us with additional comments with any additional useful information they think would be helpful to this working group's consideration of the data we collect. And I see Paul McGrady's hand up and then George's. So go ahead, Paul.
Thanks, Phil. So I think that there's a good possibility that the providers of these additional marketplace protections will respond to these questions. As Phil noted, perhaps what they will do for some of them, not all of them, is to supplement what we could find out on our own by visiting websites and looking at rules and things like that. I do think it behooves the additional marketplace providers to provide robust responses to this very modest list of questions, because at the end of the day, if their additional marketplace protections are doing something in the market that would necessarily go away if what they're doing becomes a mandated RPM, then they may have a real-life marketplace bottom-line reason to explain what they're up to and how that fits into the greater RPM ecosystem. So I'm expecting a pretty good response rate on this stuff. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. And as I said, I'm pretty much in agreement with you. I don't know why they wouldn't want to share that information, and to a large extent it's already available on their websites. I'm going to call on George and then followed by Mary, who's had her head up for a while. Go ahead, George.
George Kregos for the transcript. Yeah, I wanted to echo what Paul just said about hoping that the registry operators will be the ones that provide the data, because it's probably much higher than if staff just did it on an ad hoc basis, visiting the websites of the providers. And another consideration is that those policies have evolved over time. And so just doing a snapshot in September 2017 of what the current policy is will not capture how those policies have evolved since 2014. So we'd want to know not just the current status, but we'd want to know how they were in 2014, 2015, and so on, in order to get the complete picture of how those RPMs have existed and how they are today. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Go ahead, Mary.
Thanks, Phil. This is Mary from staff. I just raised my hand to actually agree with your suggestion on the way forward, Phil. So what staff can take as an action item from this call is to look at each of these questions, and to the extent that on websites and so forth of the different registry operators or the TMCH operator, that there is that information, we can compile the links. We can also go through the information and prepare a summary for the working group.
Well, that's great, Mary. And as I said, I think that's a necessary first step. It doesn't stop us from asking follow-up questions once we review what's publicly available regarding these services. And as I just stated, I think we should certainly offer, and some questions may want to ask additional follow-up questions to the registry operators. I do recognize that there are some areas that some of us might have curiosity about that they'll regard as proprietary data that they don't want to share, but certainly about the elements of what they offer and what the cost is, I would think that's pretty public information. So far as the impact of using these services on a decision to forego or use less of other mandated RPMs, that's something we're going to have to look to the users of the systems, the trademark owners, for feedback on.
Hey, Phil, it's Claudio. Can I jump in?
Yes, you may, Claudio, and you're first in line. Go ahead.
Thank you. It's really a thought that, in conjunction with what Susan was saying about information that's out there, and it just reminded me about the staff report that cited that there were 30,000 Sunrise registrations in 2014, I believe it was. And so I thought if staff was able to compile that for 2014, that they might be able to do that for the additional years, and that might shed a lot of light on some of these issues. But I just was curious if I'm correct in that assumption. I'm not sure if Mary could speak to that, but I was curious if that is, in fact, something staff would be able to do. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Claudia. And, in fact, Mary has her hand up, so I'm going to turn to her and see what her response is.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Claudia. This is Mary from staff. Actually, Claudia, could I ask you to repeat what the data information was? I think you're referring to the staff paper that, as you said, we started doing in 2014, and there was a draft that was published for public comment in, I think, February 2015, with the final version out in September that year. So I'm familiar with what's in that document, but I missed what you said about the specific information that you've been you're asking us to update. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I think it is that document. I found it on one of the wikis, but it sounds like that is the document. And it within that document, it cited that there were over 30,000, roughly 30,500 Sunrise transactions. Is how it was described in that document in 2014. So that was the data point that I'm referring to.
Phil, this is Mary. I can follow up on that.
Yeah, please do. Go ahead.
Claudio, yes, that's correct, and we do have the updated information. We do get reports from registries and registrars with numbers, and hopefully what we actually have already started to compile is what you're looking for. We actually have started looking at the numbers of the Sunrise registrations since that time, and one of the things that staff is doing is putting together some graphs and tables and spreadsheets for this working group that will have numbers on, the dates of the Sunrise, with which type of GTLD operator offered start or end date Sunrise, as well as Sunrise registration numbers. So hopefully we'll have at least that data ready for everyone in a couple of weeks, if not sooner, and you can take a look. Anything else that you are thinking about and that's not there, we can try and get it. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Mary, for that very useful follow-up. Let me, we may be able to end early today. Let me just comment, though, on some stuff that's been in the chat room. There was some back and forth discussion about whether or not any of these private services offered by registry operators went through the Registry Service Evaluation Policy, the so-called RSEP. There was originally a question proposed by the co-chairs that went to that. The sub-team decided that was not within the mandate under our charter, and that's been archived. So that's where that stands now. There was also a comment about whether any of this might lead to a suggestion that ICANN mandate the offering of private services, well, I guess would be reviving the issue of a blocking list as a required RPM. That's not a question here. It's really not a data-gathering question. It's a, in my personal view, it's a policy recommendation. I think whether the working group wanted to discuss mandating some type of blocking services, a one-size-fits-all. That's up to the working group after we review, I think, what's out there in the marketplace and how it's impacting the mandated RPMs and how useful trademark owners are finding this. But I don't think that's a question that needs to be raised at this point in time, but that's open for discussion if anybody wants to discuss it further. But I think it's premature to even think about that right now. All right. Well, we have gone through the questions. We've discussed the next steps in terms of staff work and staff consultation with the co-chairs, and the co-chairs then getting back to the working group. And I don't know that the floor is still open. I see George has his hand up, but we may be nearing the call in terms of discussing the report back of the sub-team that's been framing these questions. So go ahead, George.
George Kriklis, again for the transcript. Yeah, just a general observation. All these questions appear to be from the perspective of either rights holders or the registry operators. And what seems to be missing is any input from registrants themselves who are not rights holders. And I think that's an important consideration because that helps to look at the impact in terms of costs on the public of these additional RPMs in terms of the inability to register these domain names that might be dictionary words or acronyms or other commonly used terms that should be available to anybody. So is that something that we intend to look at, or are we looking at it only indirectly as it affects Sunrise? Because there's obviously no input in these questions from the public with regards to how these RPMs affect them. Thank you.
George, let me ask for clarification, and then I see Paul has his hand up. Are you thinking that there's some additional question here that should be asked that isn't on the list, or are you suggesting that when we analyze the information we get back, we should keep that perspective in mind and be open to having it raised within the working group? So could you respond to that, and then we've got a let me call on George to just respond quickly to my query, and then Paul and Kathy have their hands up.
George Kriklis here. Well, it's a question of timing. Do we want to do it now, or do we want to do it later? So I leave that up to the working group, but I think it's a very important consideration to consider the impact of on registrants of these additional RPMs. And so if we're only going to ask the registry operators and the trademark holders, we're obviously not capturing that input at this stage. We might want to do it at this stage, capture that additional input, or we might want to wait till later. It's up to the group. My preference would be to capture it now, but I'm sure others have different views on that. Thank you.
So can I get in the queue behind Kathy as well, please? It's Susan.
Yeah, Paul's next, then Kathy, and then you, Susan. Go ahead, Paul.
Thanks, Phil. So just in response to George's question, the sub-team that developed these questions had a narrow remit about what we were going to be doing, and we were going to be gathering fact-based answers based upon fact-based questions that had to do with sort of diagnosing where the additional marketplace RPMs sit within the RPM ecosystem. We were not undertaking qualitative analysis or developing questions about qualitative analysis in relationship to how specific end-user registrants are affected. There was a group within the sub-team that wanted to cast the net more broadly, but the sub-team asked the co-chairs to provide direction on that point, and our narrow remit was confirmed. So to the extent that there are questions like that, you know, they may be asked in some manner by this working group, but that was not what we were told to do as a working group. And then I think secondly, and I'm sure Kathy will confirm this, but there are people whose constituencies are chartered to look after registrants, and we certainly had robust participation from anybody that wanted to participate in this working group team, including those whose charters deal with registrant issues. So it's not like folks representing registrant issues were excluded. I think the issue that George is raising has to do with the remit of the working group rather than you know, non-representation. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Kathy, and then Susan's waiting after you, but Kathy first.
Okay. So this is Kathy again in my personal capacity, and I will share I was in many of the sub-team calls, not all of them, but many of them. Okay, to George's question, is there then, you know, he makes a point, he makes a good point. We're talking to registry operators, we're talking to providers, we're talking to trademark owners, you know, should we be talking to registrants? And so would this address part look at first bullet point, the same one we've just expanded to go to trademark owners, should we perhaps seek to add this to the registrant survey as well that's already going out and ask if people, you know, if there are any, you know, if there's any information people want to share with us about how blocking their ability to register domain names they consider to be, you know, that they're trying to register, so that we're kind of hitting the whole community of the questions similar to the extension of the trademark claims and some of the notices that are going out. You know, there may be a registrant impact, and perhaps we should grab it as part of the data gathering exercise that Paul just shared. But I want to make sure that I let everybody know, with my co-chair hat on, my thanks to the sub-team, which worked very hard over many weeks under great leadership from Paul. So thanks to the sub-team for reporting back today to the working group. But and I see that George says, sure, that would be fine, Kathy. George, you might want to come back in the queue to talk about it. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. And Susan's next in queue, followed by Greg. And for those who have finished talking, if you could drop your hands, that'd be good.
Hi. Thanks. It's Susan. I don't think anyone will be surprised if I say that I'm completely opposed to that suggestion that Kathy just made. I think it's important to bear in mind what the charter for this working group, this PDP working group is, and it's to review the ICANN-mandated RPMs. It's not to review and pass judgment on anything extra that a registry operator has chosen to do in order to be a good actor and to try to consumers from deception and confusion. If registry operators have chosen to adopt additional mechanisms which they think make their registry more attractive or a better operator in the marketplace, then that's entirely their choice, subject to, obviously, you know, to them proposing something which ICANN says is not permitted. But it's not our job to be passing judgment on voluntary practices that have been adopted by registry operators. It's outside of our charter, and so these questions go to you know, providing very interesting information that is outside of scope. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for that input, Susan. And Greg has his hand up.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. What Susan has said as well. Also, it seems to me that to some extent, you know, asking this to quote unquote registrants, all, you know, however many billion potential registrants there are out there, we'd also want to ask them whether registrations of domain names have prevented them from registering the same domain name in the same TLD. I think the answer to that is similarly self-evident. You can't register the same domain name, exact domain name, twice in the same TLD, and blocking works the same way. Also, seems if we're going to look at impact, and I don't think we should in this way because it's outside of our remit. We should also ask consumers whether blocking services increase, whether they know it or not, security. And trust in the internet because it prevents infringing or fraudulent or abusive domains from being registered and ripping them off, which is, of course, you know, a big reason why we're all here in the first place. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. So that was a good discussion of that issue. Any more thoughts on it? All right. Well, at least this co-chair will take that full discussion under advisement and think about what's just been said. I don't have any further questions. Is there anything else about these questions that anyone wants to raise for discussion right now? Well, then, seeing no hands and hearing no voices, again, the co-chair is working with staff, are going to determine where these questions should be directed. We're going to share that initial determination with the working group for comment. We're going to allow, in some cases, staff will be collecting data that's publicly available, but we will give the parties that offer these private protections the opportunity for additional input to any further explanation they might want to share with the working group. We also may, once we see that the explanations of the services and costs, may have some additional follow-up questions, which we can't predict at this time, and we'll also decide whether there's any additional data sources we need to look at and also share that with the working group for comment. So I think we've done probably as much on these private protections as we can today. But the floor is open for another 10 seconds if someone wants to interject on this. If not, I'm going to open the floor for any other business, any other issues that working group members want to raise on today's call. Silence is deafening. George, go ahead.
George Kriglis for the transcript. Just a minor point. Last week's call got canceled, and somebody on the mailing list had asked whether there was going to be an amended schedule of all the future calls to take into account the work that was missed. So I just want to raise that small point. Also, there were various questions that were asked of INTA's survey provider, Nielsen, and I was wondering whether we will ever get a response to that, and if so, when. Thank you.
Okay. Let me address those in reverse order, George. So far as further response from Nielsen and or INTA, I don't know the answer to that. If staff has any response on that, I'll look to staff for input. So far as the schedule, the co-chairs had a discussion of that. We're going to stick with our general schedule of scheduling the APAC call, believe it's 0300 call, of having that be the last call. It's easier for people to remember that the last call of each month is the one that's while people are sleeping in Europe and have finished breakfast in Asia and are waiting to go to bed in the U.S., then moving the whole schedule back by a week and perhaps confusing everyone. So that was a co-chair decision. I don't think it's going to make a big difference in the long run. It's going to be rare when we skip weeks on meetings, given the press to keep moving forward with this working group. And on that point, our next call is Mary, is anyone else, I believe it's the 27th, so next week would be the 0300 call. Is that correct? Mary, go ahead.
Thanks, Phil. This is Mary from staff. As Julie has put in the chat, and in pursuant to what you just said, that would be the fourth rotation, so it would be the APAC-friendly call. Staff did have a question for the chairs and the working group as to, and this is something we can take offline with the chairs, as to what would be the best topic for discussion next week on that call, not just because of the time zone, but because of having completed this initial discussion of the additional marketplace RPMs. As I mentioned, we are in the midst of gathering a lot of the specific data that had been requested and identified, as I mentioned earlier, sunrise dates, registrations, totals, and so forth. At this point, I do not know that we will be in a position to have something that is in a form that we think would be useful to the working group by next week. So I just wanted to flag that and for the co-chairs and the group to know as we discuss with the co-chairs the agenda for the next week and the weeks to come.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. And the co-chairs have not yet had a discussion with staff regarding what should be the focus for next week's call. And we always welcome input from working group members when they think we should be taking up a new subject or returning to one that we've put aside for a week or two. So we welcome your input. I don't have an answer yet on what our focus will be at the call that, for those of us on the East Coast of the U.S., takes place at 11 p.m. at night once a month. So with that, if there are no further... Claudio?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so George might have been referencing a note I had sent to the list. It was less really about the scheduling. It was really in reference to the document that I think is up on the wiki that sort of outlines, you know, where we are in the bigger picture time frame on, you know, hitting certain milestones. So I was just curious if that was being updated or, you know, just sort of where we are on that sort of bigger picture issue.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Claudio. I think on that, on the timeline, frankly, we're waiting to see the council disposition of our data survey request and motion taking place later today. Obviously, that motion is approved, and we hope it will be approved because those data requests were developed from the bottom up within this working group. That will affect our timeline, so we're waiting for that, and then we'll work with staff on revising the timeline. And but I can assure you that the co-chairs and staff have already discussed what we can be doing to keep forward momentum if, assuming council approves that motion, what will we do during that time that these survey questions are being designed, disseminated, and analyzed that relate to trademark claims and Sunrise registrations, and we do plan to take up other matters so we're not just putting everything on hold for any significant period of time. But we'll have to report back in more detail after today's call and after council action. Okay?
Thanks.
All right. Unless someone else has a burning question or comment, going once, going twice, we are adjourned. You have 14 minutes of your life back, and we'll not see you, but we hope to hear from you 1 week from today at the APAC slot call. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Phil, Paul, everyone.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Today's meeting is adjourned. And, Shelly, can you please stop the recording?